prefaced by Stanislav Grof, MD. The use of psychedelic substances can be traced back to the dawn of human history. From time immemorial, plants, mushrooms and animal materials containing powerful mind-altering compounds have been ingested in various parts of the world for a variety of purposes. They have been used in the context of shamanic rituals, aboriginal religious ceremonies and rites of passage, healing procedures, mysteries of death and rebirth, and spiritual practices. The legendary divine potion referred to as Haoma in the ancient Persian Zen Avesta and as Soma in the Indian Vedas was used by the Indo-Iranian tribes several millennia ago. Preparations from different varieties of hemp have been smoked and ingested under various names: hashish, charas, bhang, ganja, keef, marijuana. In India, in the Oriental countries, in Africa, and in the Caribbean area for recreation, pleasure, and during religious ceremonies. They represented an important sacrament for such diverse groups as the Brahmins, certain orders of Sufis, ancient Scythians, and the Jamaican Rastafarians. Preparations from the bark of the shrub Iboga, Tabananthi Iboga, have been used by African tribes in lower dosage as stimulant during lion hunts and long canoe trips, and in higher doses as a ritual sacrament. Ceremonial use of various psychedelic substances also has a long history in Central and South America. Highly effective mind-altering plants were well known in several pre-Columbian Indian cultures among the Aztecs, Mayans, Olmecs, and Mazatecs. The most famous of these are the Mexican cactus peyote, Anhanolium levini, the sacred mushroom Tionanacatl, Psilocybe mexicana, and Ololeuque, seeds of different varieties of morning glory, Ipomoea. These materials have been used as sacraments until this day by several Mexican Indian tribes and the Native American church. The famous South American yagi, or ayahuasca, is a decoction from a jungle liana, Banisteriopsis carpi, with other plant additives. It's being ritually used in Brazil by the Ayahuasqueros, the Santo Daime people, and by the União de Vegetal. The above list represents only a small fraction of psychedelic compounds that have been used over many centuries in various countries of the world and held in high esteem. The members of the social groups that used them had the opportunity to repeatedly experience psychedelic states in a variety of sacred contexts. Because of their capacity to provide experiential access to the numinous dimensions of existence and to the world of archetypal realms and beings, psychedelic plants represented for these groups the main vehicle of the ritual and spiritual life. All the groups, tribes, and entire cultures that have ritually used psychedelics considered them sacraments, flesh of the gods. Psychedelic materials also played an essential role in the diagnosing and healing of various disorders and were used for cultivation of intuition and extrasensory perception. The long history of ritual use of psychedelic drugs contrasts sharply with a relatively short history of scientific interest in these compounds in industrial societies. The first psychedelic substance that was synthesized in a chemically pure form and systematically explored under laboratory conditions was mescaline, the active alkaloid from the peyote cactus. Subsequently, chemists were able to decipher the formula of ibogaine from the African shrub iboga and of the hamala alkaloids from Banisteriopsis carpi and Piganum hamala. However, after the pioneering clinical experiments with mescaline in the first decades of this century, very little research was done in this most interesting problem area until 1942, when the Swiss chemist Albert Hofmann discovered by accident, or serendipity as he prefers to call it, the psychedelic property of a substance of extraordinary potency, LSD-25, the diethylamide of lysergic acid. This new semi-synthetic ergot derivative, active in incredibly minute quantities of micrograms or gammas, millionths of a gram, inspired a renaissance of interest in psychedelic substances and started a revolutionary era of research in psychopharmacology. Never before had a single substance held so much promise in such a wide variety of fields of interest. For neuropharmacologists and neurophysiologists, the discovery of LSD meant the beginning of a golden era of research that could solve many puzzles concerning the intricate biochemical interactions underlying the functioning of the brain. Experimental psychiatrists saw this substance as a unique means for creating a laboratory model for naturally occurring psychoses, particularly schizophrenia. They hoped that it could provide unparalleled insights into the nature of these mysterious disorders and open new avenues for their treatment. LSD was also highly recommended as a unique teaching device that would make it possible for clinical psychiatrists and psychologists to spend a few hours in the world of their patients, and as a result of it, understand them better, be able to communicate with them more effectively, and improve their ability to help them. Early experiments with LSD revealed its unique potential as a powerful tool, offering the possibilities of deepening and accelerating the psychotherapeutic process, as well as extending the range of applicability of psychotherapy to categories of patients that previously had been difficult to reach, such as alcoholics, narcotic drug addicts, and criminal recidivists. Particularly valuable and promising were the early efforts to use LSD psychotherapy with terminal cancer patients. These studies showed that LSD was able to relieve severe pain, often in those patients who had not responded to medication with narcotics. In a large percentage of these patients, it was also possible to alleviate or even eliminate the fear of death, increase the quality of their life during the remaining days, and positively transform the experience of dying. For the historians and critics of art, the LSD experiments provided extraordinary new insights into the psychology and psychopathology of art, particularly various modern movements and paintings and sculptures of native cultures. The spiritual experiences frequently observed in LSD sessions offered a radically new understanding of a wide variety of phenomena from the world of religion, including shamanism, the rites of passage, the ancient mysteries of death and rebirth, the Eastern spiritual philosophies, and the mystical traditions of the world. The discovery of LSD was soon followed by another major discovery, when Albert Hofmann was able to isolate two active alkaloids from the magic mushrooms used by the Mazatec Indians in Mexico. Psychedelic research seemed to be well on its way to fulfilling these great promises and expectations when it was suddenly interrupted by unsupervised mass experimentation of the young generation and the ensuing repressive measures of a legal, administrative, and political nature. The problems associated with this development was blown out of proportion by sensation-hunting journalists. Many psychiatrists and psychologists who had the chance to explore the extraordinary properties of psychedelics felt that this unfortunate development wasted what was probably the single most important opportunity in the history of these disciplines. Had it been possible to avoid the unnecessary mass hysteria and continue responsible research of psychedelics, they could have become a tool that would make it possible to radically revise the theory and practice of psychiatry. This research would have brought a new understanding of the psyche and of consciousness that could become an integral part of a comprehensive new scientific paradigm of the 21st century. Most of the psychedelic researchers grudgingly accepted the legal and political sanctions against these substances and reluctantly returned to mainstream therapeutic practices. A few attempted to develop non-drug methods for inducing non-ordinary states of consciousness with the experiential spectrum and healing potential comparable to psychedelics. And then there were those who refused to accept legal sanctions that they considered irrational, unjustified, or even unconstitutional. They saw the extraordinary benefits the psychedelic therapy offered to their clients and decided not to sacrifice the well-being of these people to scientifically unsubstantiated legislation. In addition to the therapeutic value of psychedelics, they were also aware of the entheogenic potential of these substances, their capacity to induce profound spiritual experiences. For this reason, they understood their work with psychedelics to be not only therapeutic practice, but also religious activity in the best sense of the word. From this perspective, the legal sanctions against psychedelics appeared to be not only unfounded and misguided, but represented a serious infringement of religious freedom guaranteed by the Constitution. Something similar happened in the general population. The legal and administrative sanctions against psychedelics terminated all legitimate scientific research of these substances, but did not deter lay experimentation with them. As we've seen, psychedelics have a long history as sacraments, used in ritual and spiritual practice, as well as powerful medicines for the treatment of emotional, psychosomatic, and even some physical disorders and diseases. The centuries of use and reputation of such plant materials as peyote, Tinanacatl, and ayahuasca as entheogenic sacraments and medicines with remarkable therapeutic effects speak for themselves. We usually hear that young generations use psychedelics for kicks and thrills. This is only partially true. I've met many people of all ages in California and elsewhere for whom responsible use of psychedelics represents a serious spiritual practice. They are very careful where and when they take these substances, and more often than not, they use friends as sitters to hold their kite string. And even those who ingest psychedelics in a problematic set and setting, such as raves or wild parties, where these are added to fruit punch or brownies, can get at least a glimpse of the enormous healing and spiritual potential of these substances. In the last analysis, the use of psychedelics by the young generation, as well as many adults, is thus not happening for trivial reasons, but reflects a deep, even if not fully recognized, self-healing impulse and spiritual craving. It will therefore undoubtedly continue, and all the silly programs trying to suppress it without understanding the depth of the problem, war on drugs, or Nancy Reagan's drug-free America, and just say no, are destined to fail. We are thus facing a situation where millions of people are experimenting with psychedelics and law-abiding professionals, psychiatrists and psychologists, are not allowed to conduct research with these substances and are painfully uninformed about the problems involved. Under these circumstances, what is sorely needed is objective information that is not confounded by politically biased drug propaganda ignoring scientific evidence. The early explorers discovering new parts of the world attempted to chart the territories they had traversed. Many of these old maps have vast areas that carry the inscription "Hic sunt leones," here are lions. This was an agreed-upon code for as yet unexplored regions, full of potential dangers and possibility of unpleasant surprises. Those of us who decided to explore in the 1950s the unknown and utterly unpredictable effect of the newly discovered mysterious substance, LSD-25, had no other choices than to venture into the land of the lions. This is not necessary for the psychonauts of the 21st century, since there are many individuals who have traversed these territories already and can provide valuable information for the neophytes. Nocturnal Butterfly is an extraordinary travelogue of inner journeys that can uniquely serve this purpose. Its author Jacob, a determined, serious spiritual seeker, repeatedly undertook psychedelic journeys into dimensions of reality normally hidden to human senses, and brought back a true treasure trove of information invaluable for those who will follow his steps. Reading Jacob's book will undoubtedly make the journey of these people easier, since he shares with unusual honesty not just the promises, but also the pitfalls of his adventures in non-ordinary realities. Jacob's inner journey started at an early age. He was introduced to the use of cannabis when he was still in high school. It opened for him a fascinating visionary world that was fantastic and magical. In particular, he discovered new dimensions in music. He could not only hear music in a new way, but experience rich synesthesias. He could see music and taste it. Reading of the book Realms of the Human Unconscious, Observations from LSD Research, a gift from one of his friends, further stimulated his curiosity in inner exploration. In summer 1984, Jacob had 8 LSD sessions that took him deep into the transpersonal realm. He experienced feelings of unity with nature and had a sense that he could communicate with plants and various kinds of animals in a way one can read about in shamanic literature. He found a glory in the world that he was previously unaware of. In one of these sessions, he connected with a spirit guide named Asos, with whom he could communicate and who would provide him advice and guidance in the years to come. This situation had some similarity with the experiences that C.G. Jung had with his own inner guide, Philemon, whom he actually credited as a source of certain parts of his psychology. In September 1984, at the age of 17, Jacob ingested a large dose of LSD-25 that triggered an overwhelming and potentially devastating experience. Suspecting that this breakdown might actually be a condition similar to the shamanic initiation crisis, with the healing and transformative potential, he was looking for a guide or teacher. He was able to connect with Yuan Lumbu, a psychologist very knowledgeable in the area of consciousness research and transpersonal psychology, since he had translated many books from these fields from English into Danish. Yuan was also himself experiencing at that time a psycho-spiritual crisis. They began exchanging psychotherapy sessions and helped each other to reach resolution. The Nocturnal Butterfly is a detailed description of Jacob's arduous spiritual journey catalyzed and facilitated by ingestion of psychedelic substances. It had many ups and downs, but eventually ended up in a successful integration and surge of creative energy. Following inspiration and instructions of another spirit guide, Guan Qiuzhuk, who appeared in one of his sessions, Jacob transformed in the course of 12 years his garden into a magical place abounding with archetypal and astrological symbolism. Another important channel for Jacob's creativity has been his deep involvement in music, both as a performing artist and a composer. In the garden, he personally built a unique studio, Axis Mundi Studio, that combines a shamanic interior with up-to-date high-tech sound equipment. The floor of the studio is decorated with a mandala, featuring on its periphery images of four power animals: tiger, dolphin, snake, and eagle, representing the four elements: earth, water, fire, and air. The mandala is divided into six equal segments, decorated with emblems of the great religions of the world: Buddhism, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Hinduism, and Taoism. In the center is a symbol of the unification, the cosmic religion. Jacob also designed his own 19-string butterfly-shaped, richly decorated guitar with two wireless transmitters, a harp, an electric violin bow, electric, acoustic and synthesizer pickups, and a built-in light show with 40 lights. Guitar maker Orker Netwast Vestfeldt actually built this instrument following Jacob's design. After Jacob's 40th birthday, the fruits of his inner odyssey, his autobiographical novel which he himself illustrated, his music, films, and the garden he created, which had long gestated in his private life, started to reach the world at large. A major Danish TV channel included in its news a report about his green-powered Axis Mundi studio, and its staff expressed interest in making a documentary about his book, his garden, and the annual concerts that he organises. A major integration occurred also in Jacob's private life. He was able to resolve what he identified as karmic entanglements in his relationships with women and met Ekaterina, who had come to Denmark from Moldavia. He found in her an ideal partner, a true soulmate and wonderful mother. Nocturnal Butterfly, an extraordinary book that documents Jacob's stormy search for the self, will entertain and educate not just past, present and future psychonauts, but also professionals who have been, by public hysteria and ignorant legislation, deprived of researching psychedelics and gaining knowledge about these substances that, if properly understood and used, have unparalleled heuristic, healing, transformative and even evolutionary potential. Stanislav Grof, MD, Mill Valley, California, September 2008.